Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, boys and girls, headlines live from the Emerald Queen Casino, of course, are brought to you by our friends at Buddy's Goodies and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
It's unfortunate that we had that on our air live. That is disgusting.
We'll start with some news in the NCAA. After 6 years and two games, Clay Helton fired today as the head coach at USC. Dante Williams takes over on an interim basis for the rest of the year. Helton 46-24 overall, winning two bowl games, the Vegas and the Rose Bowl at USC. Again, Clay Helton out as head coach of the Trojans.
There were a lot of key injuries in the NFL yesterday. Washington quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick will miss at least a few weeks with a hip subluxation. Bronco wide receiver Jerry Jeudy, 4 to 6 weeks with an ankle. 49ers lose Raheem Mostert for 8 weeks with knee cartilage injury, and the Lions have lost starting corner Jeff Okuda for the season with a torn Achilles.
Let's get to our Seahawk opponent audio recap right now.
Touchdown, Detroit Lions! Or did he fumble?
Unbelievable.
You want to talk about ripping your heart out.
He came after Carson Palmer, a breakdown in protection, and the Seahawks were on Palmer now.
This is the opponent audio recap.
Boy, that hurt.
That sure did.
That one hurt.
The season can't end like that. He missed it left.
Let's hope that we have 16 more of these. We made the decision a couple years ago to only do this after Seahawk wins because nobody in their right mind wants to hear it after a Seahawk loss. Can you believe that we actually did that on this show? We had a recap of a loss. I mean, what the hell were we thinking?
Well, see, when we make mistakes, we fix them, right? We correct them when we make mistakes.
Unbelievable. I mean, you talk about Jesus, idiot, putting a recap on the air of a game the Hawks lost. We could turn off the radio station for crying out loud. So yesterday was a good day for the Seahawks. No question about that. Getting the W in Indianapolis against the Colts. Hawks are 1-0, winning a game on the road to open the year for the second consecutive year, 28-16 over Indianapolis. What did this bad boy sound like on Colt radio? Here is Matt Taylor on 1070 AM in Indianapolis. Roll it.
Colts looking to draw early and get 3 points in the first possession of the game. There's the snap. The ball is down. The kick is up, and it is good. It's third down and one for Seattle on their own 40-yard line. They trail the Colts. Russell Wilson goes under center on third and short. Play action. No, it gives off to Chris Carson. Slips out of a tackle. Big hole. 50, 40 inside Colts territory. Down the near sideline. Inside the 30. Finally hauled down, but a huge run by Chris Carson inside the Colts 30-yard line to the 27. This is the ninth play of the possession. It's already over 4 minutes. Wilson out of the gun. Ball's on the left hash. Three receivers to the right. One goes left. Running back to his left. That's the boundary. Play clock is down to zero, but he gets it off. Wilson fires downfield to Tyler Lockett, makes an over-the-shoulder grab for a touchdown. Third down and five. The Colts have the ball on their own 30-yard line, and they're going to have to snap it because the play clock will expire before the game clock. Wentz does. He's in trouble, and he's brought down by Bobby Wagner all the way back to the 20-yard line. That is a major loss of 10. Also in there was Rasheen Green, and now it's going to bring up fourth down at about 13. Russell Wilson under center on second down and six. Back to play at the 35-yard line. Rolls out on play action. Fires upfield. It's caught inside the 20-yard line to the tight end, Will Disley. Upended immediately by Kenny Moore, but a chunk play inside the Colts red zone. Gain of 22. And Seattle is cooking, looking for more points here on the scoreboard, already leading the Colts 7-3. Penny's to the left. He's the running back. Wilson out of the gun. Three receivers put out wide to the right side. Ball between the hash marks for Wilson on second down and six from the Colts 9-yard line. He backs to pass. He's got time dancing. Fires upfield. Crossing pattern at the five and into the end zone, and a dive is Gerald Everett, the tight end out of South Alabama. A 9-yard touchdown pass. Russell Wilson has two touchdown passes in two drives to start the game, and Seattle now leads the Colts by 10. It's 13-3. Wentz has time. Fires upfield to Zach Pascal into the end zone. Is it a catch? The signal on the field is a touchdown! Touchdown! INDY! Zach Pascal! 10-yard reception from Carson Wentz, who throws his first touchdown in a Colts uniform, and it's 14-9. Russell Wilson has been the most sacked quarterback since 2012. He's dancing in the pocket. Now he's going to heave it way downfield. field. He's got a man. That's Tyler Lockett in stride, over the shoulder grab, and he walks into the end zone for a touchdown. And that's a gain of 69 yards on a deep bomb down the field. Russell Wilson to Tyler Lockett. Colts haven't converted a third down since their touchdown drive in the first half. 7:07 to go, third quarter. Wentz drops the pass, feeling pressure in the backfield, and again he's going to be twisted down and sacked. That's Benson Mayoa back to the 5-yard line, a loss of 12. Another sack for Seattle, and the Colts will punt it, and now it's 4th and 18. So far today, the Colts are 0-for-1 on fourth downs. Again, they need the 16-yard line for a first down. Wentz out of the gun. Hines to his left as the back. Two receivers split out wide to the left side, ball in the right hash. Wentz out of the gun. Looks to pass. Has time. He's hit. He throws, and it's incomplete. Play action. Wilson deep drop wide open downfield. DK Metcalf at the 50-yard line, and then he gallops inside Colts territory. Let's see where they mark him out. It's going to be inside the 45 to the 43-yard line. A huge play. Wide open was Metcalf to change the field position. Wilson out of the gun. Again, Carson to his right. Gerald Everett, the tight end, to the right. Wilson looks left. Pump fakes. Fires into the end zone. It's DK Metcalf for a touchdown covering 15 yards into the end zone. And Seattle has their biggest advantage of the game. It's now 27-10. The Colts will wave the white flag, and that'll do it. Final score here at Lucas Oil Stadium.
End of the game.
In week number one, it's the Seattle Seahawks knocking off the Colts 28-16.
Hey, somebody help me out here. How long was that bomb to Lockett, by the way?
69.
I've been sitting on that since yesterday, about 2 o'clock, by the way. So thank you, Lockett and Wilson, for delivering that gift for us. Tyler Lockett had a big day yesterday. DK Metcalf had a big day. Russell Wilson had a big day. The defense had a big day. Shane Waldron had a big day. I mean, he was incredible yesterday with this offense. And look, obviously at some point in time there's going to be peaks and valleys, no doubt.
Yes.
But I thought from a debut perspective, it was pretty damn solid. Russell Wilson now in his last two road openers against the Colts and Atlanta has a passer rating of 147, and that's after not having one snap in the preseason. So I thought last year we kind of learned how worthless the preseason was. This year with the way the coaches approached it, we found out how worthless it was. And then watching the way Russell Wilson performed yesterday, we found out exactly how worthless it was.
Make no mistake, Seahawks Twitter at some point will kill Shane Waldron.
Oh, here we go.
At some point this year,
Seahawks Twitter. Oh,
Shane Waldron will be getting blasted on Twitter for not knowing what he's doing. How could he possibly do that? He cost us the win. It will happen. But for now, for 1 week, it's nice we didn't have to read any of them.
Let me ask you a question. What do you hate worse, Seahawks Twitter or the folks who think the M's are in a playoff race?
Seahawks Twitter.
Which one? Really?
Twitter, yeah.
Okay, just checking in.
Seahawks
just making
Twitter,
sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Because at some point, I mean, you talk about Shane Waldron. At some point, he might deserve it to be criticized. I mean, the guy's coached one game, and I thought he looked great yesterday.
Yep.
Whatever you call it, the pullover, whatever it is, it's not a shirt,
yeah,
it's not a polo. It kind of throws me off because it looks like he's wearing a backpack with those stripes on his shoulders.
Yeah, it looked a little baggy,
you know what I'm talking
too.
About? Like, yeah, the baggy
like it
thing,
was like
I guess.
2XL.
Yeah.
Pretty fairly fit guy, right?
Is. Well, he's got some baby fat.
Yeah,
he's
some,
got a little
yeah.
baby fat on him. He's only 41, for God's sake, so I don't blame the guy for having a little baby fat, but I just think, dude, for
41
him.
41 yards!
He's got that thing, and it throws me off every time. Like, he's so young. He's only 41.
41 yards.
And every time I see his face and I see that shirt and I think he's wearing a backpack, I'm like, is this guy going to school? Is he waiting for a bus or something? He's so damn young. But did you cringe like I did yesterday in the second half? I think it was the first drive of the second half. They run that wheel route to Tyler Lockett. That's just underthrown by this much, mm-hmm. right? Lockett's got to stop and kind of come back and grab it. I think it was the very next play. Russell Wilson's rolling to his right about 10 minutes left in the third quarter. And Kenny Moore takes a shot at Wilson right at his knees.
I know exactly what you're
and
talking about.
And as the play is unfolding, it's like, I'm thinking to myself, that's the kind of play where a quarterback gets hurt. That just kind of real, just, you know, nondescript play, not a big hit, not a lot of people on the pile, and a guy takes a shot at my quarterback in the open field, and for a split second there, my heart skipped a beat.
That ends the season. Play like that ends the season, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And Russell has an uncanny ability, not only to be elusive, but when he does get hit, I don't know. He should teach a master's course when he retires in how quarterbacks can avoid big hits.
Oh, yeah.
Because he just has an unbelievable ability to get his body in the exact right position where he can cushion the blow all the time, no matter if he's in the pocket or running.
Well, and he turns away from contact a lot, obviously. You saw that yesterday in that game a couple times. I thought Fox did a horrible job of showing Russell Wilson's perspective on the first touchdown to Lockett because the blitz is right in his face, and they didn't show anything from behind the offensive line. You know, Jonathan Vilma, well, I mean, this is like the freaking G team for Fox, right? When Kenny Ober,
what do you call him, Raheem Green?
Oh, that was Albert kept calling him Raheem Green the entire game, and they corrected that at some point. But that's going to happen, obviously, when guys do games like that. I just thought the underrated portion of that touchdown to Lockett is the fact that Indianapolis sent a linebacker right up the gut, right in Wilson's face, and he stood there like there was nothing coming. Yeah. It was unbelievable. I mean, his pocket presence, man, is insane. And we've known for a long time that Russell Wilson is a really good pocket passer. So, look, all of this will hinge on when the year's over, obviously, what they do come playoff time. There's no doubt about that. But that one play right there, I'm thinking to myself, dude, you're behind the chains anyway. Get rid of the damn ball. Duck out of bounds. Live to see a different day. The more hits like that he takes, the more you increase the odds of him getting hurt, and I can't have that. And you can't have that, and this fan base can't have that.
There is a Brady Edelman-type trust between Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett right now. And there are very, very – I mean, you can probably count – the quarterback-receiver combinations. I'm not talking about the best quarterback-receiver combinations in the league.
Right.
I'm talking like the Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs. Okay, yeah, we'll just talk about talent. Talent, okay. I'm talking about trust. You can't name five quarterback-receiver combos that have a just an innate sense of each other like Russell Wilson and Tyler.
Oh, I think it's one of the best in the NFL, if not the best in the NFL. And I saw this graphic on Fox. I'm watching the game last night. These guys, Wilson and Carroll, are now tied for sixth place all time with Jim Kelly and Marv Levy for most wins between a quarterback and a head coach. And there's only one group in front of them, and that's Roethlisberger and Tomlin. So you could see a situation unfolding where, let's say they win, they average 11 games a year for the next three seasons or whatever, and they're number three all time between Drew Brees and Sean Payton. So that's what you have going on right now between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. And the other thing is that this is a guy in Russell Wilson who, with two more touchdowns, he's going to tie Joe Montana for 18th all time in pass touchdowns. Go back to the night he was drafted. Remember the night he was? I think you were working that night.
Yes.
And they drafted Russell Wilson. If I would have told you, hey, dude, in 10 years from now, he's going to tie Joe Montana on the all-time touchdown list, you would have said, you're out of your freaking mind. Well, he's two touchdowns. I mean, that might happen in the first quarter of the game on Sunday.
I would also say
against the Titans.
I would also say we probably have about three Super Bowl champs.
Exactly. Well, they should have had two.
They should have had two. You know, it's interesting. I think it was the Pete Carroll press conference last night that I was listening to about Shane Waldron and why he's on the sidelines.
Right, as
and
opposed to upstairs.
And he gave him, like, the choice. And the one thing, I'd never really thought about this before, but they talked about the benefit of being on the sidelines.
Right.
Is it can actually help when you're involved in the emotion of the game.
Right.
And you can feel the momentum. You can feel what the defense is thinking and what the defense is doing down on the field much more than you can in a sterile press box. I thought that was kind of an interesting comment.
Well, it's not working for John Don because John Don's
He's
on the sideline.
Yeah.
John Don's down there as opposed to being upstairs. And Baird brought that up, that maybe it's time for the Huskies to kick John Donovan upstairs where he can see more of what's happening. Look, here's the problem with John Donovan. And Shane Waldron doesn't have it either, but Shane Waldron, what a situation for a first-year offensive coordinator to be in. Are you kidding me? I mean, the guy decides to take a job where he's got Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Dwayne Brown, and Gerald Stinking Everett. And by the way, Chris Carson, who when healthy, is a top 10 running back in the NFL, okay?
Yep.
And he's got a good defense on the opposite side. So just like Russell Wilson, when he came in as a baby, Shane Waldron's got a freaking awesome situation to be in as an offensive. He can only screw this up. I got to be honest with you. If this doesn't work for Shane Waldron, there's a problem for Shane Waldron, unless Pete Carroll gets in the way and makes him run the damn ball. I saw something yesterday that I don't remember I saw a lot with previous guys, and I thought of you the second it happened, and I thought, you know what, there's a chance, and I hate to be graphic right now, there's a good chance that Dick Fane just took his pants off because they ran a tight end screen to Gerald Everett in this game yesterday, and it was freaking beautiful.
Well,
are you kidding me? Where the hell's that been?
And you know what made me take my pants off was the run pass ratio. Russell Wilson threw 23 balls yesterday.
Right.
I mean, all year long, can I have that efficiency, please?
Absolutely. We're going to break. You were doing Ian's show today for an hour, so you missed out on this, but I had a chance to catch up with Joel Klatt today. And the minute we talked, by the way, Clay Helton got fired. So we got some thoughts on that from Joel. We got thoughts on the Michigan-Washington game from Joel. What does he think the issue is at UW? Joel Klatt, courtesy of VenueKings.com, coming up on 950 KJ.
Guess all in one.
It's time to talk college football with Fox Sports' Joel Klatt. Brought to you by Venue Kings. Visit VenueKings.com. Now with Joel Klatt, here's Softy and Dick.
All right, we are back here at the Emerald Queen Casino, hanging out for Monday Night Football. Ravens and Raiders coming up at 5:15 tonight. Big thanks to Venue Kings. Looking for tickets for the Seahawk-Titan game on Sunday. Venue Kings can get you in the door for just over $100. Use code Softy at checkout at VenueKings.com. Well, here he is from Fox Sports, fresh off calling the Oregon-Ohio State game. He's got Nebraska-Oklahoma this weekend. Our friend Joel Klatt, courtesy of VenueKings.com. Joel, how are you?
Good, man. How are you? What's going on?
Well, the Huskies are 0-2 for the first time since they went 0-12 in 2008, and that makes me want to vomit when I bring that up. But you were doing the Oregon-Ohio State game on Saturday. We'll chat about that in a second. I know that you saw some of the UW game. We are pretty much at DEFCON 1 in a lot of ways with Husky football in Seattle. Give me your thoughts from 35,000 feet on what's happening on Montlake, pal.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sentiment is real, you know, and listen, the first week is unexcusable. And to be honest with you, getting dominated like they did against Michigan is inexcusable. Michigan is a team with very little expectations. This is not like a top 25 team. This is not the 2018 version of Michigan with Devin Bush at linebacker and Rashawn Gary on the defensive line. I know Aiden Hutchinson is a really good player and likely will get selected in the first round. But let's not mistake, you know, every Michigan team as being the same team. Now, we'll see what this team ends up being, but I'm just saying right now, there's not a huge amount of expectations for this Michigan team. And something they just bludgeoned Washington to death. They won both lines of scrimmage. Washington continues to have a real problem trying to run the football, and for an offensive line that was thought to be one of the strengths of the team, wouldn't you agree with me? They just haven't played like that so far this year.
Well, that was our question on Saturday night during the postgame show, Joe, from Michigan. How could we have been so wrong about this offensive line and this run game? I mean, they have given up. The Huskies have 470 yards rushing in two games, including 343 to Michigan on Saturday, and they've run for 115. They're giving up over five, and they're running for under two. And it wasn't just me and you. Phil Steele had the Husky offensive line as one of his top units in the country. Running backs are deep as hell. How could we have been so wrong on this football team?
Well, I got to tell you, I think it's there's so much to go around. And by the way, you guys aren't the only ones, right? You mentioned I was in Columbus for that Ohio State game, and they're thinking the same thing about a defensive unit that they thought was going to be very good. Okay, everyone thought that defensive line was going to be one of the best in the country at Ohio State. It has not panned out that way. They can't get pressure. They didn't stop the run. So you guys are not in a boat. You know, I know it feels like you're on an island when you're going through this as a fan base and watching your team struggle. You're not the only one. Having said that, how do you get things like this wrong? I don't know. I know that from an Ohio State perspective, it's a combination of really poor execution, at times bad effort, and some really bad scheming at times from the coaching staff. And I think it's similar for Washington. Let me give you an example. Okay, there was a series. I thought it was a pivotal series. Second quarter, UW starts driving. It's 10-0. You remember, right? And they start getting towards the scoring territory. And they did that largely with the ability to throw the ball. In that series, they had moved down the field largely with their ability to use a little play action and throw the football. And in fact, right before this set of downs that they stall out, you know, they use the play action over the middle and they hit the tight end for a nice big completion. And it feels like there's some rhythm in the passing game. So what happens on first and 10? They get into an empty set, force Michigan to spread out, and then they get a free access throw, meaning the corner is in back deep responsibility to the field, the wide side, and they get an easy 5 yards. Bam. That it happens. Boom. So second and short now, scoring territory. They try to throw a big play action pass. And this is where it starts to go awry, because I felt like the ball was completely, you know, uncatchable, and a ball that probably should have been completed. And from that standpoint, quarterback's got to make a better throw. But then this is where a long story to get to where I'm going right here. On third and fourth down, the execution from the offensive line was awful, in particular on third down. And then on fourth down, the poor execution was equaled with an equally atrocious play call on fourth down.
Yep.
Now, to be fair, quarterback does run up an audible right before the fourth down play, right? And yep. So I don't know if he's just changing directions. We don't know this. All right, I'm not privy to this. I don't know if he's just changing directions or outright changing the play. I will tell you this, though, that on that look, on that fourth down, what you were getting was heavy man coverage, single safety, heavy edges from Michigan. Really heavy. When I say heavy edges, that means, like, for the wide side of the field, Aiden Hutchinson is standing up, and he, you can tell he's a heavy edge player. There's a player right behind him in the second level. So not only do they have a large edge presence, they also have an overhang. And Washington runs what looks to be a zone read, reading Hutchinson, when there's a second level edge hangover right there. I'm like, wait, you can't do that.
Yep.
That's just like that's gonna go for 0 yards every single time. And candidly, if you see that your quarterback's doing that and you don't like it from a coaching perspective, I don't understand how you don't call timeout before that snap. It's probably the biggest snap of the game. It's 10-0. You're driving down. At that point, there's like 5:20 on the clock, I believe, in the first half. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a massive play. It's fourth down. Those are times when you got to use the timeouts. They let the ball get snapped on a fourth and four from the 31-yard line, and they ran zone read with an edge and an overhang. And I'm like, I got to tell you, when I see things like that, it makes me go ballistic. Because I'm like, the kids had no chance to succeed in that scenario.
Joe Klatt is with us, and yeah, that was a huge topic on our postgame show as well. They started the game as well with a delay on offense, by the way. So, you know, right away you have this Keystone kind of cops mentality. But, you know, you're talking about John Donovan, who's the offensive coordinator, who was fired at Penn State to make way for Joe Moorhead. I said this on Twitter on Saturday. I think Jimmy needs a more seasoned staff. I think hitching his wagon as a head coach to an offensive coordinator that outside of a couple years at Vanderbilt has no track record of success, I think is a mistake. For those that want the OC fired, what do you say to them?
Well, let's focus more on the head coach, because I think that it always lands on the head coach. The performance of the coordinator is a direct reflection of the head coach. Okay, so from my seat, what people fail to realize, and I think what young coaches fail to realize, is just how important it is for them to hire and then manage their staff. I think that's arguably the most important job that a head coach has, maybe yeah. Equaled only by his ability to recruit. Okay, so think about that, what I just said now, right? That had nothing to do with the actual, like, game plan, motivation, development of the players once they're in the program. I think that the two most significant and biggest things that a head coach does, first is his ability to recruit. Secondly, is his ability to hire a staff and then manage that staff. And the great head coaches have unbelievable coaching staffs under them. I think Ryan Day is going through some of this growing pains at Ohio State. And I keep bringing that up because I was just there. I did two of their first two games. But he kind of dipped into the well and just went back to Kerry Combs, had no real defensive coordinator experience, although he had been around good defenses his whole career. And now, all of a sudden, their defense is an abject disaster. Meanwhile, by the way, he had to hire a couple of full-time assistant coaches this offseason, and he just promoted from within guys that had never been in those positions at a major program. So now, all of a sudden, this guy who's been this bright, shining light as a coach and a game planner and an offensive play caller, more specifically, now that he's losing his luster. Why? His ability or inability to hire a staff and then manage that staff. And I think Jimmy's going through the same thing. Remember now, a lot of great young coaches have terrific mentors around them. Do you know who Lincoln Riley kept on his staff at Oklahoma, actually brought him into the staff fold his first year as a head coach after he replaced Bob Stoops in that abrupt kind of end of spring deal? You know who his first hire was?
Who's that?
Ruffin McNeil.
Wow.
Do you know why? Because Ruffin McNeil had been a head coach. He worked with Ruffin when Ruffin was a defensive coordinator at Texas Tech and then was the interim coach when Mike Leach got fired, and then they went to East Carolina together. He coached under Ruffin McNeil. So now all of a sudden, here's Ruffin McNeil, who's been around the block and a head coach and has the ability to provide some mentorship and guidance when managing a staff of grown men, and he had that. Ryan does not necessarily have that at Ohio State, although Kerry is an older guy and maybe a guy like Larry Johnson, but it just goes to show you that when you're a young guy like Jimmy Lake, you know, it's not all about just hiring guys that you like to come do those jobs.
No, he needs it. He needs the help. Hey, Joel, I know you have to go real quick. USC has just announced that Clay Helton has been fired. Your thoughts on that? How about that?
Well, I got to tell you, it feels like it's been about 3 years in the works, right? Their fan base wanted it, and they've wanted it for a while, and so it happens. And if I was Oregon, I would be very scared because I think that they're going to go try to back up a truck for Mario Cristobal.
Joe Klatt, great stuff, man. Love it. Have fun with the Nebraska-Oklahoma game this weekend, and we'll
appreciate
talk next Monday, pal. Appreciate it, buddy.
You got it.
You bet. Joe Klatt with us, courtesy of VenueKings.com. We'll get a break. Testimonials 49451. Your reaction to the weekend that was the low of Saturday, the high of Sunday. Dog fans, where do you go from here? Seahawk fans, are you buying this? What we saw on Sunday, that just maybe Pete Carroll has found the right guy to run this offense. Your thoughts coming up next, 49451, the Coors Light text line. We're going to hear from both Pete Carroll and Jimmy Lake at 5 o'clock tonight before Ravens and Raiders right here on 950 KR.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon parentheses.
Take it away, Dave Softy Mahler and Dick Fain.
All right, the coach's box, baby. Jimmy Lake, Pete Carroll. Every Monday before the Monday night game, we'll hear a bit from Jimmy Lake and Pete Carroll coming up next. But right now, time for Textimonials live from the Emerald Queen Casino, hanging out live for the Raiders and Ravens. Swing on by. Dick Fain has given me $500 cash to buy drinks for anybody who needs one, especially if you're a dog fan after watching that misery on
Drown their sorrows.
Appreciate that, Dick.
No worries. Thank you
very much for leaving your credit card with
yep.
us. So Raiders, Ravens coming up 515-49451, Coors Light text line. Jackson, what do you got?
If John Donovan is this much of a whiff, what does that say about Jimmy Lake's evaluation?
Well, I think it says he made a mistake, and he's got to not make two, right? Yeah. I mean, coaches make mistake hires all the time. I mean, Pete Carroll, how many offensive coordinators has Pete Carroll had?
Four.
He had Jeremy Bates. He had Daryl Bevel, Brian Schottenheimer, and now he's got Shane Waldron. So he has fired three coordinators, right? I mean, it's not like Daryl Bevel left for a better job. Jeremy Bates left for a better job. Brian Schottenheimer left to be like the assistant quarterback coach in Jacksonville, for God's sake. So even Pete Carroll makes mistakes at coordinator.
Look, there's bad hires all the time, and it's what you do after that. Do you make a habit, a trend of bad hires, or do you make one bad hire
right
at the beginning of your career? Pete Carroll made one basically at the re-beginning of his NFL career in Jeremy Bates.
Do we see the Donovan thing working at all? Is it too late?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't
all
see
right.
It.
What's next?
Jen Cohen and Jimmy Lake need to fly to Los Angeles tomorrow and hire Graham Harrell now.
Ooh. Well, he runs the air raid, right?
And Jimmy Lake hates the air raid.
That's not what Jim, what's his name? Jimmy Lake likes to do at all. But I think if you're Jimmy Lake, I think there's also room to say that a young head coach should be able to evolve and make philosophical shifts. And if his ground and pound and run the damn ball thing isn't attractive to offensive coordinators these days, then Jimmy Lake has to decide what is his desire. Is it his desire to score points and hire the best OC possible? Or is it his desire to have a certain type of offense and then go out and find a certain type of offensive coordinator? Because that's what he's done with John Donovan.
Well, I think he realizes that certain type of offense helps his defense out.
Because,
you know, when you run an air raid offense, your defense gets exposed.
Absolutely.
It is out there all game long, and that's
right.
That's why I don't like the Seahawks throwing 40-plus times a game.
Really what he needs is an offense that scores points. End of story. And this offense isn't scoring points. Dick, they've scored 10 points combined in the first half in four consecutive games. You remember when the season ended, we said, hey, look, this slow start thing they had against Utah and Stanford, that can't happen. And it's happened.
It's just continued.
Exactly.
Well, it's basically been John Donovan's entire Husky career,
yep.
A slow start in the first half. There was in, what, one game, right, where he jumped
Arizona,
out?
Arizona,
Oregon Arizona, two
it.
Games they jumped out on him. That was it.
And since then, it's been all downhill. And that's not a good thing, by the way. What's next?
My biggest surprise watching the Hawks game yesterday? Russell Wilson running a quarterback sneak on 3rd and 1.
No, yeah. I loved it.
It's
I loved
call.
It, man. I thought it was amazing to see what he did yesterday. We haven't seen that at all from previous Seahawk offensive coordinators, but I do want to – this guy is a valuable commodity, man.
Yep.
And the less hits he takes, the better. I mean, I get it. At some point, it's football. You got to play. But the 3rd and 1 quarterback sneak, you're right, man. It's so easy. And it's so simple, and there's no reason really not to do it. And you mentioned how Russell is great at evading pressure. I think one of the reasons why he's been healthy is because the guy's yoked. He's stacked.
Yep,
he's seen Russell Wilson with his shirt off. He is a put-together young man. He's the opposite of me. So I got no problem with asking Russell Wilson from time to time to absorb some pressure.
I love the quarterback sneak. I've always loved the quarterback sneak. It is statistically the most effective play at getting a first down on 3rd and 4th and 1. That is, it is well over 70%. I've looked into it. Now, Patrick Mahomes did go out for a month.
Right.
On a quarterback sneak.
He did.
So
he did.
It's not foolproof as to it's always safe for your quarterback.
Of course. Well, I would love to see them find a way to incorporate a fullback as well, maybe in an I formation when they need something like that.
Yep.
But Nick Ballore's playing linebacker now. So
he can play fullback for a play, too.
He can do both. What's next?
Was it my imagination, or did it seem like the only time the Indianapolis crowd got loud was on 3rd down? Almost like pumping crowd noise in.
Yeah, I don't know, but I thought the Seahawks fans there were loud as hell. And there was a lot of fans that made the trip from Detroit to Indianapolis for the Seahawks game. Some Duck fans I know even made the trip from Columbus to Indianapolis to watch the game. It's 4 hours from Columbus and 4 hours from Detroit. But that just continues to, I don't know how else to say it besides this, it impresses the hell out of me how loud those crowds are when good things happen for the Seahawks on the road.
We
and
heard
here in the recap
at
every
least
week.
3 times. I noticed I was watching the game with Dixon, and I turned to him. I was like, listen, what are they saying? And he's like, they're saying Seahawks. And there would be like 3 Seahawks, and then you'd hear the rest of the crowd go, boo.
Right,
and it happened like 3 times in a row. You could hear it on the broadcast.
Let's get a break. The Coach's Box. Are you guys cool with that name for this next segment? I dreamed of it. It was my creation. Nobody else has ever used it in talk radio. The Coach's Box. Jimmy Lake. Pete Carroll. We're going to hear from both. Get into a habit every Monday at 5 next on 950
KJR AM and KJR FM HD2.
Seattle!
Available everywhere with the iHeartRadio app. Now number one in podcasting. Sports Radio 950 KJR and iHeartRadio station. Now from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Hi, boys and girls. Here we go. Headlines live from the Emerald Queen Casino, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
Isn't anybody going to help that poor man?
Need tickets for the Seahawks Titan game on Sunday. VenueKings gate in the door for just over $100. Be sure and use code Softy at checkout for a discount. Well, Clay Helton was ushered out the door at USC today. After 6 years and 2 games of getting slammed by Stanford on Saturday, Clay Helton fired by USC this afternoon.
Seahawks injury report, D. Eskridge, Penny Hardin, concussion protocol. Ethan Posick, a sprained knee. No word yet on their availability. Rashad Penny re-aggravated his calf injury and reportedly will miss a few weeks.
All right, let's get to it. The Coach's Box. Every Monday we'll hear from both Jimmy Lake and Pete Carroll before the Monday night game tonight, Ravens-Raiders at 5:15. Let's start with Jimmy Lake, who began with his opening statements on what happened against Michigan on Saturday.
So the positive thing is we have lots of football left to play. Our players are in good spirits. They know we haven't played our best football. You know, we've put a lot of work in the offseason to become confident and to put all of our packages together in all 3 phases. And for these first couple of weeks, we haven't played our best. And our players know that and our coaches know that. And that is the exciting thing for us, is we know there's a lot of room for improvement, but the improvement needs to happen now. And all the work that we've been doing needs to show up with the results on game day.
There's a lot of chatter amongst the fan base about replacing John Donovan. How do you address that?
Yeah, I mean, right now what we need to do is, just like I just mentioned at the top right there, is we need all this work that we've been doing, all the positive mojo that we've had coming out of spring football, coming out of training camp, a lot of the positive stuff that we saw happening in practice. Shoot, a lot of the positive stuff that we did in 2020, that's not showing up in these last 2 weeks. I understand the frustration, but it's our jobs to get our offense going and show results, and show results. And it needs to start this Saturday.
You've struggled in the first half offensively the last four games. Is there any explanation as to why that would be?
Again, it comes back to coaching. It always comes back to coaching. We're at fault, and we gotta put our players in better positions to start off fast and to make plays and move the football and convert third downs and score points. And so it comes back to us as coaches, starting with me. And we have a bunch of talent. We have good depth. And we need to start fast, and we need to score more points.
You hired John Donovan. You said that you wanted to run the type of offense that you felt was difficult to defend as a defensive coordinator. You know, putting the defensive coordinator hat back on, scouting this offense, has it become predictable?
There's definitely some things that we need to change, and I think there's some things that we need to utilize who we have available. And who we have available, we got to make sure we're able to move the ball with who we have available. You know, that's the bottom line of what we've gone through for me these last couple of weeks. We need to lean on our strengths and lean on who's available. We can't try to run plays where guys aren't used to running those positions and making plays in those positions.
Is this John Donovan saying, this is my offense, this is what I want to run, or is this offensive scheme and system dictated more by the head coach?
It's collaborative. It's collaborative. It's all of us together. And so, believe me, if you're pinning any blame, put it on me, if that's what you're trying to say. Everything goes through me first, okay? So if you want to pin blame, just put my name on the article. I'm the one to blame, okay? But as we meet in there, it's collaborative, and we're trying to put our players in the best position possible to be successful on offense, defense, and special teams. If there's any negative things that come of that, blame me.
You know, I thought that was as blunt and frank a line of questioning as a Husky head coach has taken in a long, long time.
And I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Because that's the type of questioning you'd be asked in the SEC.
Absolutely.
If you were 0-2. So why not here?
Yeah,
and
of course.
You know, Jimmy said use the guys that are available. Does that mean you're going to use Sean McGrew now?
Yeah.
He's available. You're going to use Kamari Pleasant?
Yep.
He's available.
He's not played a snap so far this year. It's amazing. How about Pete Carroll starting off with his opening comments after a win over Indy yesterday?
I really liked the overall effort. It was a complete effort in that everybody contributed, and both sides of the ball and special teams played together well. And the complementary football was obvious. And Mike kicking the ball, backing him up all day long, we were efficient enough to play a good, solid football game. So, and again, like I said before last night, I think because of the respect we have for that club, you know, this was a really good, solid win.
Hey, Pete, what's the latest on the guys in the concussion protocol?
It's going to take, you know, a couple of days to get it done. They're not the same. They're individual cases, and we'll treat them, of course, individually. But there's a time frame sequence that they have to follow through to make it back. So nothing to make a prediction about right now, other than, you know, we'll see what happens all the way to Wednesday, and that's when it kind of starts the thing back towards their return.
What's your kind of outlook on Rashad Penny's status and how he's going to handle the calf situation, and what does that do for you guys here in the short term?
Yeah, he's got a calf strain, and it'll take us a bit to figure out, you know, what the return would be on that. He ran really well when he ran the other night, so we're going to miss him. It looks like this week, you know, we won't know. But we'll let you know how that goes. You know, Alex is ready to go, and both Homer and DJ have done, you know, they're ready to go too. So we're in good shape. We had four running backs up this week, so we're in pretty good shape at the position. Unfortunately, if it takes them a couple weeks, and we'll figure out how to handle that.
What did you see about the whole pass offense that worked better than last year?
Well, I don't know that's I wouldn't jump to conclusions about what better than last year. I just think we were sharp first time out. A lot of guys contributed, and there's a lot more there, you know. So, you know, it was a really efficient, good first ball game. I had a couple protection issues that we just missed out on that we could have easily changed the outcome of. And other than that, it was really almost flawless. So it was a very, you know, very good start. I don't know about comparing it to anything in the past.
Well, good stuff from Pete Carroll. Good stuff from Jimmy Lake as well. But just going based on what we heard from Pete Carroll there, I agree with what he said about the pass game. And Hugh Mellon said the exact same thing this morning. There's more meat on that bone for the Hawks because there was that point in time where they had three or four drives where things kind of bogged down. The protection wasn't as good. And I just think this, the idea of flipping back and forth thick between centers, pick a guy. And I think Kyle Fuller's their guy.
Ethan Posick, what, plays nine snaps, gave up a sack, one out of nine. Right. That's not a good ratio.
Yeah, to Buckner, and almost got Wilson killed, by the way. So, but that's hard to do. It's hard to come off the bench and then say, hey, go block DeForest Buckner,
that's
for
true.
God's sake. So,
that's true.
I mean, you don't see NFL teams do that, and it was kind of weird, I thought, that they did that yesterday. It's almost like they're not totally certain if Kyle Fuller's their guy. But I thought after what we saw yesterday, it was pretty obvious that he was their guy. And I'll tell you what, the other guy that played well that we're not talking a ton about today, it's Quandre Diggs. There was one play, a 24-yard pass to Campbell, where Quandre Diggs came out of nowhere and almost ended him yesterday in that game. So it's good to see some pop back in that secondary.
Safeties look good. I kind of liked how they used Jamal Adams, too. I mean, the one time the blitz didn't work when they gave up the touchdown.
And then guess what they stopped doing?
They stopped blitzing
exactly.
him. Exactly. Yeah, they used him other places. He was good in the run stops. He was the fifth guy. I mentioned the PFF had the top five rated defenders, all defensive linemen.
Yep.
He was the fifth guy. So PFF liked what Jamal Adams did yesterday.
Let's get a break. We'll come back. Monday Night Football, the debut. Kevin Harlan, Kurt Warner are in Vegas at the Death Star. We got Ravens Raiders coming up next on 950 KJR.